Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for joining us. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is off today. Well, the apparent suicide deaths of two students in Parkland, Florida, have brought home the severe trauma affecting students who survived that mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. It's a reminder that the devastating after effects of gun violence can reverberate long after the immediate trauma of surviving such a horrific event. Now, to respond to this, a new community center opened ahead of schedule this week in Parkland. It's called Eagles Haven. Cindy Ehrenberg-Seltzer runs the Children's Services Council of Broward County. They contributed funding.
Anybody that was affected by the MSD tragedy can walk in. Some of the preliminary thoughts are wellness, drumming circles, pet therapy, yoga, cooking classes, maybe some ceramics, art therapy.
That's a good effort. You know, suicide is the second leading cause of death for young adults in this country. Yet even though Florida lawmakers allocated millions in mental health support for students in the wake of Parkland, it turns out very little of those resources are actually going toward suicide prevention. We're going to begin the hour with a closer look at this here on the Florida Roundup this Friday as we welcome Ana Ceballos with the News Service of Florida and Dr. Nicole Mavridis with the University of Miami. Dr. Mavridis is a child psychiatrist and professor at the University of Miami and also a graduate of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. We want your calls, too, statewide as we discuss the suicides in Parkland. It's 305-995-1800. Send tweets to at Florida Roundup. Dr. Mavridis, you're a graduate of MSD. And so let me ask you first off, for the students that are mourning, continuing to mourn and deal with the after effects of what they went through, we want to begin by sending good thoughts to them and their families today. Dr. Mavridis, I know that had to have been close to your mind when you heard about this.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not just a graduate. I actually still live in the community. And it was shocking that something like this had happened, and to have two so close after one another, it was horrific for the community and the families.
And so what about the fact, Ana Ceballos, that while the legislature worked very hard to respond to the mental health needs of Florida students, there isn't a lot that's dedicated in the way of funding towards suicide prevention? And suicide is the second leading cause of death for young adults in this country. And as we've seen now this week, these students suffered terribly for many months after the mass shooting in Parkland. And for a number of reasons, they didn't get the help they needed. How do you see the legislature responding to this, along with school districts individually?
Right. So Senate President Bill Galvano has said that mental health was always at the heart of what he wanted to push when the Parkland shooting happened. And whether it was assessing at-risk students and diagnosing them and giving them the services they needed, there's really no specific language that school districts need to spend the money that they are getting for suicide prevention. There's literally no spelling out of suicide prevention that they are required to do. But school districts are provided the money, and they're supposed to submit to the state their plans of how they plan on treating and providing these services. And so now that's the debate of, you know, will we add language to how spending can, or how those state dollars can be spent in regards to specifically, you know, PTSD or suicide prevention.
And I think one of the things that's so difficult with that is that there's such a need, but there's also such a paucity in child psychiatrists and psychologists nationally. So even though there might be, it's a great goal to have, we actually need to have the manpower to get into those schools and have someone who's trained in asking those kind of questions.
And there's certainly a shortage of professionals that are available to do that, Dr. Mavridis. Let me let everyone around the state know, you can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline anytime, 24 hours a day. The number is 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. Anytime you or a loved one you think might be needing that support, don't be afraid to make that call. As we talk about the apparent suicides of two students from Parkland, Florida, in the wake of the mass shootings at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, we want your calls here on the Florida Roundup right now. Let us know your thoughts and questions about this, how we can better support students and those who are struggling with suicidal thoughts. It's 305-995-1800 to call us, tweets to at Florida Roundup. Anna Ceballos and Dr. Mavridis, let me ask you, Dr. Mavridis, as a follow-up. You're saying we need more trained professionals working with students. That is a heavy lift. You know, guidance counselors at most Florida high schools are spread pretty thin. I think they do the best they can with the load that they have. And, you know, we've heard a lot from students at Parkland in the wake of this. They've been tweeting and talking about this, saying just because the resources are there doesn't mean a student will on their own walk in and access them. It can be difficult for educators to assess which students are struggling the most. That's another part of this, isn't it?
It actually is very true, and I think many of these kids who are suffering are not going to be the ones who are going to go in and ask for help. And so it doesn't just fall on the educators and the guidance counselors. I mean, this is something that the parents and the families have to be actively involved in. You know, they need to be continually asking these kids how they're doing. They need to question whether or not they're struggling with anxiety or depression, or if it's just normal kind of mourning behaviors. But if parents are seeing things where kids are, you know, starting to withdraw or isolate themselves, or, you know, their grades are slipping, or they're really, really angry, you know, they need to be asking, are you depressed? Do you need to see somebody? They're not going to put new thoughts into these kids' heads if they ask them if they're having thoughts of hurting themselves. But that's the only way to really know these things. And because guidance counselors are so underserved, and because there's a mass shortage of child psychiatrists in the nation, you know, their resources, even though they might be there, they're spread very thin. So parents and families have to be the ones really asking some of these hard questions.
And Anna Ceballos with News Service of Florida, as we talk about all of this, the legislative session is happening now in Tallahassee, and a proposal to arm teachers in Florida classrooms is advancing through the process. We'll have to see if it makes its way into law and whether and how it would be implemented in schools around the Sunshine State. You know, how does that aspect of this inform the discussion among lawmakers?
Well, I think the controversial provision, it's such a comprehensive school safety bill, and, you know, this provision is taking a lot of the attention. You know, it's concerning to many teachers and students who, you know, don't want to expand the school guardian program, so therefore there's kind of a lack of conversation regarding the mental health provision and other security measures that they could be taking, whether it be, you know, more security cameras or just the design of how they can better prevent or better act in active shooter situations. So it's a very big bill, and it's, you know, there's only so much time to discuss it, and it has the arming teacher provision has been taking most of the attention so far.
And so then you believe it's likely to win the support that it needs to be enacted into law?
I mean, just look at the facts. It's leadership on both sides of both chambers are pushing this, right? I mean, Senate President Bill Galvano, this was his proposal last year. He has the full support. He's fully supporting the measure this year as well. And it's, you know, education. The Education Committee chair has completely backed this. So it's like Republican leadership is very, very much in support of this. And, you know, the legislature is controlled by Republicans. So it looks like it's very likely that it will be passing this year.
And Dr. Mavridis, you know, as we learned about the apparent suicides of the Parkland students, at the same time, the week prior to this, a parent in Connecticut who lost a child at the mass shootings at a school in Newtown apparently took their own life, died by suicide, I should say. We also learned this week about an NRA employee actually questioning details of the Parkland shooting with a conspiracy theorist affiliated with the Sandy Hook shootings. And so not only did the kids at Parkland survive this mass shooting, they've also had to deal with false accusations that they were crisis actors, that the shootings didn't actually happen. We've seen this crop up again and again when these mass shootings occur around America. This adds to the trauma, doesn't it, that survivors experience?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the fact that the media is, you know, 24/7 and there's people who are questioning the authenticity of, you know, these events definitely adds to the trauma, and it just prolongs the fact the times that these kids need to recover and to really get back to normal or to the new normal kind of post, you know, school shooting. And it's unfortunate. You know, I can't comment on the conspiracy, but I think that anytime there's this question that children or that, you know, schools are lying about things, It's just bringing up all these bad memories for these kids. And anytime you have a resurgence of talking about the event, trauma is gonna be brought back up. And PTSD is really, this is what can really breed PTSD for children.
It's 305-995-1800 here this Friday, statewide on the Florida Roundup. Send tweets to @FloridaRoundup. And if you need to access a list of mental health resources, that's also at WLRN.org. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, meanwhile, is 1-800-273-8255. And so, Anna Ceballos, how can schools then try to access the resources that are clearly needed for students, particularly those that have been through an ordeal like this one? Do you see the policy discussion shifting this way at all as the legislative session marches on?
Well, you know, right now we're entering budget negotiations, so that's sort of where the conversation regarding mental health services and how they can help school districts to, you know, provide whatever they think is needed in their specific district. So right now the Senate, there's a $30 million divide between the Senate and the House. The Senate wants to fund mental health services for all school districts at about $100 million next year. And the House wants to fund it at the same amount that it did last year, which is $69 million. So right now, as they continue to talk about this, you know, it's more about how much money do we give these schools. The school districts will still have the flexibility to submit their plans as to how they plan on, you know, helping students. But really, they are giving some flexibility. They're required to spend at least 90% of the money that they get on diagnosis and just, you know, assessing and providing services to at-risk students. That's the language that they're giving. So it gives them flexibility.
It's 305-995-1800. Give us a call. Here on the Florida Roundup this Friday, Michael is in Fernandina Beach. Hi, Michael. Good afternoon. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes, I think that the online harassment that a lot of these shooting victims face is got to be contributing to this recent rash of suicides. I know that in Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, it's worse than a lot of the tragedies because the kids did speak out, and I'm just wondering what can be done to protect them.
Thanks for that, Michael. Dr. Mavridis, if you follow the students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas on social media who have been part of March for Our Lives and the efforts to change gun laws in this country, certainly they have taken a lot of flack. You know, it's impossible to say whether that contributed or not to these tragedies, but it has been a part of this movement. As we've seen these students emerge as really prominent voices in the discussion about how we regulate weapons, not just in Florida, but in America. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, I think it's absolutely true. And it's, you know, unfortunately, anyone who's in the public eye is going to have to deal with people, you know, what we call trolling or cyberbullying them on these social media sites. And it's hard because these are kids, right? So we, you know, celebrities get this, but they're usually adults and they've got media personnel handling this. But especially for the Parkland kids, these are just high school kids, or maybe they just graduated. So they might be barely 18. You know, there needs to be some, whether it's parental, you know, overview or just something built into these social media sites that doesn't allow these cyberbullying events to occur. Because I totally agree that this is something that can really play a huge role in affecting how someone deals with this sort of tragedy. I don't think there's a clear answer on how to do this, but I do know that many of the kids who did speak out had a lot of people, you know, posting on their social media sites and really negative things. And, you know, the kids, I think, who did, you know, die by suicide, you know, we don't know what was going on their social media sites or what people were saying, but we do know they were clearly struggling.
Ken in Kissimmee. Hi, Ken. Go ahead quickly. What are your thoughts?
Yes, ma'am. Thanks for having me. I just wrapped up 30 years in the Army infantry, and as you've seen in the news, it's been pretty rough in the armed forces dealing with the war. And many of my soldiers, and myself included, have received a lot of therapy. And I just want to say that it's really, one thing is not going to fix it. You need to throw all the resources to it. A lot of times, you know, we're only human. The human brain is very complex. And talking about it helps a lot, and dealing with it with people that can relate to. So I encourage all the communities to bring groups composed of professionals from health and also law enforcement and military from different branches, and maybe young people from the military that can actually talk to younger generations about how they cope with this. It's just really not so easy to deal with it. And lastly, a lot of times there's a little bit of a syndrome of, like, it's all over. So, like, in anniversaries, you know, we struggle dealing with it. So it's not going to go away in 2-3 years. So it needs to be a constant communication back and forth.
Ken and Kissimmee, thanks for that. And certainly from what we know about PTSD, you are absolutely right. The effects can be long lasting. People that have survived other events like this have reported similar issues. And as we continue talking about this here on the Florida Roundup, with your calls and tweets, we want to take a moment to remind everyone, if you or someone you love needs help, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. And keep listening and tweeting the show. Thanks to Anna Ceballos, News Service of Florida. She's going to stay with us here on the discussion. And Dr. Nicole Mavridis of the University of Miami, also a graduate of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. I know it's probably difficult for you to talk about this, Dr. Mavridis, so thank you for sharing your thoughts about this with us today as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, we are offering some services here down at University of Miami, and that if people do need help, you know, they to please reach out to those who they think can help them.
It's the Florida Roundup this Friday statewide as we talk about the latest news out of Parkland, Florida, and how we can better support our students, what policy changes can Florida enact. At the same time, a measure to arm teachers in the classroom is advancing in Tallahassee. We'll talk more about that after the break, and your calls and tweets here on the Florida Roundup, coming to you statewide from Florida Public Radio. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is off this Friday, and we're continuing our discussion about the apparent suicide deaths in Parkland. Students who survived the mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. As Anna Ceballos of News Service of Florida stays with us, along with your calls and tweets, it's 305-995-1800 to call the show right now. Dave is in Manatee County. Hi, Dave. Thanks for joining. You're a school guardian, is that right?
I am. I appreciate you addressing such a difficult topic. I did 32 years in law enforcement. I just retired as a police chief out of Michigan and took a position here as a guardian. And I just think it would be a terrible potential tragedy to arm teachers and ask them to address a potential deadly threat and make those kind of decisions without a lifetime of training, and to also introduce an unarmed civilian with a firearm and then have law enforcement have to decipher in a moment of making difficult decisions if that's a threat or if that's an ally. I think it's a tragedy waiting to happen, and I hope that the legislation slows down on that discussion.
Okay, and you say that with a background in law enforcement. You're a paid school guardian now, I take it. You're one of the guardians that's been brought on. So do you patrol a school regularly? Tell me a little bit more about how you're involved.
So I'm a guardian. I'm a full-time guardian here in West Florida. Most of us here, there's 40-some of us in this county, and almost all of us are retired law enforcement. So we've got 20, 30 years of experience in that type of training. And we bring a lifetime of perspective and judgment and that type of decision-making. And as much as respect as I have for teachers, I think to give them 100 hours or 140 hours of range time and then give them a handgun and expect them to make decisions about who poses a threat, the appropriateness of when to use deadly force, and then even the ability to use deadly force, which is not an easy decision to make. I don't think that is within most teachers' wheelhouse, and I think introducing another firearm into a civilian hands in a school it would be a mistake.
That's Dave in Manatee County, a school guardian there. Dave, thanks for joining us. Thanks for your thoughts. Ana Ceballos, News Service of Florida. You know, it's certainly a contentious proposal to arm teachers in the state's classrooms, although it was part of the recommendations that came out of the commission looking at the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas. Teachers have spoken out against this proposal, too. The majority of teachers say they don't want to be armed. They don't want to take this on. And so certainly lawmakers are getting an earful about this. It doesn't seem to have slowed the momentum of the bill, though, as you've been saying, right?
Right. I mean, it's moving pretty swiftly. But you're right. I mean, there is a lot of backlash on that specific program. There have been a lot of Democrats have attempted to change or amend that, how the state handles that program for quite some time now, for some weeks. They filed amendment after amendment, and they've all, you know, been tossed out. One of the recommendations that was a little bit more well received, it still didn't pass, was, you know, allowing parents to have the option to tell a school, like, hey, I don't want, if you're going to have a classroom teacher armed and be a school guardian, give us the option to not have our kid in that classroom. Some Republicans said that was an interesting suggestion. It didn't pass, but there's definitely been some attempts to modify it because it seems very likely that it will be passing.
Are you hearing at all from groups representing parents saying that they predict that parents might take their children out of schools where they know teachers are armed?
I have not heard that, but I'm sure, you know, it's a concern. I mean, it's, and, you know, at least, and that's one of the arguments the Democrats were making, at least give them the option. If lawmakers continue saying that it's a voluntary program, that it doesn't, school districts and teachers are not being forced to participate, the other argument is, well, but what if they do volunteer? What if they do make it into the program? It's not voluntary for those who do not want to be in a school with a guardian. And therefore, it's kind of like the clash of, you know, it's still a voluntary program, but you are forcing other people who will be, you know, living in that community, in that school, facing, you know, and dealing with a classroom teacher who has a gun.
It's 305-995-1800. What do you think about the proposal to arm teachers in Florida? It passed another hurdle in the legislative process happening now in the Tallahassee legislative session. And as we continue to look at this, let's go to Patricia in Jupiter. She's on the line. Hi, Patricia. What are your thoughts?
Hi. I'm a retired licensed clinical social worker, and I heard mention of guidance counselors in each school, but they are not trained or equipped to identify those who are mentally unstable in the need of extended help. licensed clinical social workers are state licensed and trained to diagnose and identify those that are in the need of long-term treatment. So I would say that they are certainly much, much less expensive than psychiatrists. So I would hope that the funding is forwarded to the appropriate university so that graduating students can be offered the opportunity to work in the schools, because they are trained in suicidality, they are trained in violence, and guidance counselors are not.
And it sounds as though you received that training, Patricia. Can you tell me a little bit more about how that training can be life-saving? Because as we heard earlier in the hour, students don't always give off obvious signs that they are struggling.
Yes. Well, one quality that we have is the ability to Baker Act a student so that they can be sent to a psychiatric stabilization unit. Only psychiatrists, I think medical doctors, and licensed clinical social workers and police officers can sign a Baker Act where the person is taken right off the campus and immediately sent to a psychiatric stabilization unit. But there are usually signs. They're isolative, they're withdrawn, they verbalize certain qualities, they're angry, they're different, they might be very, very quiet. It goes the whole spectrum. But certainly teachers can spot someone and then confer with the social worker to identify the qualities that they are seeing. And social workers do training. We can train teachers. We can meet with families. We can go to students' homes and see the home environment, because usually that's very dangerous as well. We can speak to the parents. So very often there is a lot going on in the home. We can gain entry into a home through the properly court-filed papers. So that's my feelings on this, that we need properly trained, licensed clinical social workers in the state of Florida to be in each school.
That's Patricia in Jupiter. She's a retired licensed clinical social worker. Great insights there on a very insightful recommendation, but unfortunately not one that's likely to happen in Florida schools in the short term.
No. Well, training again, that's proper training. How to, as you say, identify students that are unstable mentally. It's usually easy to spot. They're odd. They're isolative. They don't have friends. They're not able to have relationships with other students. So they're angry. They're seething, and usually the home environment is unstable. They don't have anyone that they can talk to. So they the rage within the student builds and builds until they commit a violent act. And it's too late.
And we're talking about twin tracks to the story right now here on the Florida Roundup. The response to apparent suicides in Parkland. Two students who survived the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. And at the same time, there is a proposal advancing in the state legislature to arm some teachers in Florida classrooms. Ana Ceballos, here's a tweet from a listener. Cecil tweets the show, Utah has a lot of teachers that have been armed in the classroom since 2004. They haven't had any incidents, he writes. That's 15 years worth of data to draw upon when deciding whether or not arming teachers in class presents a hazard. Any word if lawmakers have studied other states that have adopted this kind of program to added this into their school guardian program?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because it's one of Democrats hammer Republicans in the panels a lot over the evidence, right? Like, how effective has this program proven to be? It's only a year old in Florida. And, you know, they say it bluntly. There's no evidence yet to know exactly, you know, how effective it is. But they also say it hasn't also not proven to not be effective. So, you know, that's I really don't know if they are looking at the data from other states, but I know that they, in the bill analysis at least, they do admit and acknowledge that there's really no hard evidence to how effective this specific program has been. But, you know, it has not proven to not be effective either.
It's 305-995-1800. Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup as we talk about two apparent suicide deaths in Parkland sometime after the mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Anna, and I know, Anna, I know you really cover the policy side of this, but there is a lot of data that has been compiled around the country over the years to show that the grief and trauma that follows upon a mass shooting and gun violence is apparent. PTSD can linger. We need to remain vigilant for signs of distress in close family and friends. Once again, let me give the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number. It's 1-800-273-8255. Linda in Sarasota is on the line. Hi, Linda. Go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead, Linda.
Yes, that's all of my comments.
Can you say that one more time for us?
I just said I think if legislatures could spend a week in a classroom doing what regular teachers do, I think that would make their voting a lot easier for them.
Are you a teacher yourself? Are you a teacher yourself?
I have been, yes.
And so what are your thoughts about this proposal to arm teachers?
I think it's a terrible proposal. They have enough to do as it is without adding one more thing.
Thanks for that, Linda.
Such a deadly thing.
Thanks for that, Linda. Anna, certainly lawmakers have faced that criticism before from educators. They feel that the legislature doesn't really understand what they're dealing with, that they don't... you know, spend time in the classroom, as Linda said, or I'm sure Linda would really appreciate it if they did that. But education policy, it has been a big part of this legislative session. And certainly the education lobby has been very visible in Tallahassee. So, you know, we only have a short window left before bills become laws. Take us through the next steps when it comes to what we can expect by the wrap-up of the session.
Right. Well, it's already midway through session. It's flying. It's flying by. I can't believe it's already week four. But you're right. I mean, there is a small window, and education has pretty much taken over the conversation this year. You know, whether it be the school security measure, there's also charter school expansion talk with, you know, there's a tax credit a scholarship program for school choice that lawmakers are proposing. It would be, you know, a new one, and it's also pretty heated in terms of, you know, why are we putting state dollars into private schools rather than funding traditional public schools? And so that's another debate that is taking over the entire education conversation. There's higher education, you know, there's cuts to the House wants to cut the higher education system by about $120 million, I believe. And, you know, there's a lot of movement going on in that specific policy area.
And we're going to take a short break and shift gears in a moment. But once again, if you or someone you love needs help, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255. You can call that number 24 hours a day. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Here's another story that caught our eye this week. Legislators have allegedly cut a secret deal to block a proposal for E-Verify in the state in exchange for a measure that would ban so-called sanctuary cities in Florida. Now, this deal would reportedly bog down bills to have Florida businesses check the immigration status of new hires via E-Verify, and in exchange would move ahead legislation to ban so-called sanctuary cities. Those bills have been fast-tracked through committee stops in the session going on now in Tallahassee. Mike Fernandez is a billionaire healthcare magnate and a prominent political booster in Miami. He says the agriculture industry and a state senator from each party have agreed behind the scenes to block the E-Verify proposal and advance the Sanctuary Cities proposal. He declined to disclose the identity of these lawmakers or appear here on the Florida Roundup. But we do continue the discussion now with Ana Ceballos of News Service of Florida and Samantha Gross. She's state government reporter with the Miami Herald and the Tampa Bay Times. Samantha, let's start with you. You've been reporting on this alleged backroom deal. Why the impetus to bury E-Verify but advance the bill that would ban what are called sanctuary cities?
Well, E-Verify has actually had a pretty long contentious history before the Florida legislature, so this isn't a new problem. But that being said, you know, some of the state's largest business groups that have a lot of influence in Tallahassee are, you know, pretty vehemently opposed to using E-Verify. Mainly the Florida Chamber of Commerce and the Associated Industries of Florida. You know, using E-Verify would hinder some industries that largely do employ undocumented persons, including like the agriculture industry and the hospitality industry here in the state of Florida.
And we need to note that top leaders have denied there's been a meeting or a secret agreement. So no lawmakers going on the record at this point confirming that this took place, correct?
This is correct, yeah. You know, Mike Fernandez has firsthand knowledge that, you know, this was a meeting among a Democrat and a Republican senators, and that is kind of the extent that we know of this alleged meeting. But I think that just the fact that there were rumors and that this meeting was alleged kind of speaks to a larger concern that, you know, E-Verify has been stalled out and that the sanctuary city bills have, you know, been fast-tracked. And that's something that you can see pretty concretely when you're looking at the committee stops.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment about E-Verify, sanctuary cities, and more. Get on the line now, 305-995-1800. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is off today. And as we talk about an alleged deal to bury E-Verify legislation in Florida and in exchange advance a measure that would ban so-called sanctuary cities in the state, we're taking your phone calls about this, too. It's 305-995-1800 to join us. Give us a call right now. Republican State Senator Joe Gruters filed a similar bill last year. He says it's just common sense.
This is about saving lives, protecting Americans, and making sure that people follow the law. We are a country of laws. This is not a new law. It just says basically let's follow the laws that are on the book and let's comply with the federal government.
And as we continue with Samantha Gross, covering state government with the Miami Herald and the Tampa Bay Times, and Ana Ceballos with News Service of Florida. Ana, let's go to you now. E-Verify, that, as Samantha said, has had a long and winding road in this state. A lot of major employers oppose it. At the same time, the Sanctuary Cities Bill, so-called Sanctuary Cities Bill, officially there aren't real sanctuary cities in the state, depending on how you define it. But can you share some of your reporting about this as well and what you see playing out in the Capitol?
Yeah, I mean, we saw it from the beginning in the campaign trail, right? I mean, before the session even started, when Governor Ron DeSantis was elected, he was very supportive of cracking down on illegal immigration in the state. And then now, you know, we're seeing Senator Joe Gruters, who's also doubling as the chairman of the Republican Party here in Florida, he's sponsoring legislation in the Senate, and the Senate, it's, you know, it's died in the past. The House has passed it 3 years in a row. Last year, they passed it within a week. You know, it's amazing kind of seeing the changes in players, I guess, in the legislature, in both legislative branches and the executive, because there's a lot of support, a lot of momentum going on with these specific bills. Over this specific effort. And, you know, I think it's everyone who is supportive of this bill, it feels pretty encouraged. And, even in the House this week, we saw it skip one committee. It had three committee stops, now it just has two. And mm-hmm. so it looks like it's heading to the House floor pretty soon. And in the Senate, it has one more stop, and then it heads to the floor. And there's, you know, that Democrats have taken a caucus position against it. And one Republican has said that they will be voting against it as well. But they still need, you know, two more Republicans to be able to block the measure this year.
Charles tweets the Florida Roundup. There are no sanctuary cities in Florida. Why are Republicans focused on this instead of E-Verify? Maybe the business lobby doesn't want E-Verify because it puts the onus on businesses they get money from. It's a play to the base. Samantha Gross, what about that tweet?
Well, I mean, this bill essentially does, or the Sanctuary Cities bill, does define a sanctuary city for the first time in statute. And there's, you know, no such thing as a formally defined sanctuary city. And I think that the reader is right that, you know, the business industry has come out against it when sanctuary cities and E-Verify have come up before. They've taken positions, especially the Associated Industries of Florida and the Florida Chamber of Commerce. So, I mean, I think that it's a informed assumption to make that those are the industries that are against E-Verify. And, you know, for a reason, it would harm many businesses across the state's bottom line.
It's 305-995-1800 as we talk about sanctuary cities and E-Verify. Here now on the Florida Roundup, Dennis is in Venice. Dennis from Venice. Hey, Dennis, happy Friday. Go ahead.
Same to you. Yes, I have to say that I am for E-Verify to ensure that American citizens are both legally in the United States are working. I'm also against sanctuary cities because we have illegal aliens that are violating our laws and being given essentially a pardon. What we need to do is force our state and federal lawmakers to come up with an immigration law that's fair and just and allows these folks to come into the United States legally and keep the bad ones out. We need to control our immigration, but we also need immigration. So my idea on it is enforce the laws that are on the book and make more that are enforceable that are fair to everyone.
Dennis, thanks for your thoughts. Lots of calls coming into the show about this. Lori is in Davie, Florida. Lori, go ahead. Hi, Lori.
The majority of people, especially teachers and the education population or community, is against this. So I'm wondering who is pushing this bill.
Who's behind that? Okay. Yeah, thank you for that question. Sure. Samantha Gross, tell us a little bit more about what you've learned about whatever alleged deal was struck.
About the deal or about one of the bills? I think she had asked who was pushing one of the bills. I wanted
yes.
to clarify.
And who are the players? Who are the main players?
Are we talking about the Sanctuary City bill or the E-Verify bill? Because they both kind of have different folks behind
Let's
them.
Talk about who's behind both of them.
Okay. So the E-Verify bill, you know, we had said that it was introduced in both the House and the Senate, but haven't really made any strides. And so it doesn't really seem like they're getting much backing. But the Sanctuary City bill, I mean, like Anna had mentioned earlier, Senator Joe Gruters, who had, you know, filed the bill originally, is appealing to a base. This is something that polls well among conservatives as the you know, chairman of the party. It's something that, you know, it seems to be appealing to the Republican base and here in Florida. So the folks that are behind the Sanctuary City bill are people in the party. They're the people that come and testify at these committee meetings are folks who, you know, they want stricter immigration policy across the board on a state level and, you know, in Congress too. So that's kind of the people that are, you know, for the Sanctuary City bill.
And can you explain in a little more detail what the bill would do, how it would change the way law enforcement in cities works with, say, ICE?
Yeah, so basically what the bill would do is a couple different things, but chiefly requiring local law enforcement to honor federal law enforcement's request for an immigration detainer, which means they request that another law enforcement agency detain a person on the probable cause to believe that that person is undocumented. And those are people that have been detained for unrelated charges. And so what it does is it makes the law, you know, federal law enforcement's request for an immigration detainer a requirement. So if ICE requests, the local law enforcement has to honor the detainer, and they hold those people for up to 48 hours after their set release date and allow time for ICE authorities to come to those local jails and pick those people up.
Okay. Anna Ceballos of News Service of Florida, some hardline groups that are working pretty heavily to restrict immigration in Florida. They were involved in the drafting of the Senate proposal, weren't they, that would ban so-called sanctuary cities?
Well, yes. Influencing, I would say, right? I mean, it's they've been having pretty close conversations, at least based on my own conversations with the people involved and my reporting based on public records requests. We found that in January, before the Senate even heard the sanctuary city bill, there were emails between Senator Joe Gruter's staff and the vice president of an activist group that is pretty hardline in terms of limiting legal immigration and defeating what they say is anarchy in the immigration system here in Florida. And they've been, you know, focusing on getting this proposal passed this year. And one of the things that they tried to do in January was they tried to have their attorney tell Gruter's, listen, we've read your bill, the one that you filed, and we suggest that you drop certain elements of the enforcement provisions in this legislation. And what they wanted was, or what they were recommending, was that the attorney general would be in charge of filing prosecution when it came to local governments who did not completely enforce federal immigration law. And, you know, when it was filed, it had state attorneys and the attorney general, and now the suggestion that they made in January, we can see it in the current version of the bill. And Gruter's denies that they had any involvement in the drafting. But in this email, again, we see both that suggestion about having the attorney general have enforcement. We also see a list of what they call anarchy cities or so-called sanctuary cities in the bill analysis, which is like the
official bill analysis.
Document.
And let me just jump in and say you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. In the short time we have left, Samantha, a caller wanted this question asked, isn't it hypocritical to support sanctuary cities and not E-Verify? Samantha.
That is a criticism that I've heard from lawmakers and from folks who are, you know, interested in this, that kind of show up to these meetings. They say that, you know, it could be considered hypocritical, but at the end of the day, you know, the E-Verify bill has teeth. You know, it would do a lot more than the sanctuary city bill, you know, could likely do, because the E-Verify bill would not only require new hires to be vetted by E-Verify, but it would also, it has punitive measures for businesses that don't use an E-Verify system, and it would suspend licenses and things like that. So it is clear why the business community would be against E-Verify, and also might say that it's hypocritical. At the end of the day, it is the business interest.
Well,
that,
thank you so much for both of your reporting, Samantha Gross and Anna Ceballos. Thanks for joining the show. And that is our show. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Alex Gonzalez and Heather Schatz are producers. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations is Peter Meritz. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for listening, calling, and tweeting. We'll be back next week. Have a great weekend.